Okay, so we continue on with the next part. Just a practical thing to mention. There were actually, wonderfully, far more of you here than I thought there would be, so I didn't bring enough of the handouts. But not to worry, because if you go onto my website, there's an article called The Awakening, which is actually all about the Saturn-Uranus stuff. And, it's obviously, it's a sort of public type article, so it's as it is. But somewhere in amongst there is a click-through to a whole folder of information, which is basically this. I put this just on one sheet for convenience, but there's a longer version of it, really written for people not so familiar with astrology as you. So it's got a whole page of lead-in text, and you'll find that on my website. So don't worry if you didn't get a handout. Someone can have this one at the end. This was the one I was looking at. And oh, great. And if there's any spare floating around, do pop them on the table, because there are a few people who didn't get them. And then also, just to mention, I think most of you maybe have them. There's some cards here, which I'll put on the table. This is just some information about a program I'm doing in Bali, and these bookmarks likewise. Now, if I had my way, I'd like to wave my wand and teleport you all over there, because it's a very, very beautiful venue, and it's a really great program. Also to say, if the topics, it's called the 12 Holy Nights, it goes basically from Christmas-ish until Epiphany. If the topic really speaks to you, and you're not able to go for reasons of family or money or whatever, do go onto the website anyway. And the website, as listed here, is heavenandearthworkshops.com. If you go to the blurb about that workshop, you'll see a click-through to an enormous folder of notes, which are the workshop notes. And so you could kind of track yourself through the 12 Holy Nights if you felt like it. It's a process I've done on my own many times, and have always wanted to do with the group. So for me, this is a huge thrill. Anyway, so you can kind of join in at distance, even if you can't actually get there physically, and that would be great. And let me know if you are doing that. We can include you. So I thought we'd shift a little bit from the left brain and all the information. I've been sort of doing a bit of Saturn in Virgo, the practical information and the detail and all that. So I thought, well, let's go to the other end now. Look at some images. Think Pisces and Uranus. Pisces, being a water sign, has a very powerful feel for image, the feeling tone of the visual. And, you know, Uranus, because of this quality of Uranus being the awakener, somehow I associate it with sight. Perhaps, certainly insight. I'm sure that the process of insight, meaning when you really see deeply into something and it alters your whole perspective, that's an archetypally Uranian experience. The eureka, or the aha, that's Uranus. And the great thing is, you know, you can't do that one to order. It's grace. It comes. Now, you can prepare the ground for that by things like, you know, having quiet time, working in your journal, having periods of meditation, whatever it is you do that works for you. It's like tilling the soil, in a way. But you can't sort of do Uranus. It comes of its own, just like the wind is invisible and it comes on its own. Now, this picture doesn't show so well, but it'll do. This is an astrological mandala, which is made by a program called that. And this program is input with the orbital elements of the planets. And here it's not so easy to see that, you can sort of see there, but it's made up of individual lines. And each line in this diagram represents the connection between Saturn and Uranus, in this case seen from the point of view of the Sun. And the positions relative to the Sun measured over a period of time. And when you do Saturn and Uranus, I forget now what these coordinates are, but this picture is also on my website, you can download it if you want. Over time, this is one of the images that comes out, and it's really extraordinary. I think probably some of you have seen me use these before, because I love them so much, I always any excuse to bring them in, you know. And I love this because it looks very much like something, it's like an eagle soaring, or you know, even an angel or something flying, or a tulip opening. It's got that feeling of awakening to me. I'm going to take potluck here. I don't know what's the next picture. Same thing, but that's tweaked with one of these edit programs. That definitely looks like a spaceship or something. The aliens are coming. Now, right around this time of year, in 20 years ago, this was the beginning of this Saturn-Uranus cycle, of course, saw immense political changes. When the conjunction, the three conjunctions were all in late Sagittarius, all in 1988. But of course they were within orb of conjunct for quite a while either side. And so during that period, the Berlin Wall came down, there was the Velvet Revolution, Nelson Mandela was released. So truly, the world changed. And this is a picture, I believe, from Czechoslovakia, where the people are presenting flowers to the riot police behind their shields. And what's extraordinary, we're talking about the 60s, there's that absolutely apocryphal picture that comes from the 1960s. It was a protest against the Vietnam War, when there's a young woman putting flowers in the barrels of the guns of the riot police. And here is exactly the same image. And so on the same, it's Saturn-Uranus again. Saturn being the authority, Uranus being the overthrower of the authority. And so this deadlock between the old ways that must change and the incoming new energy is part of how the Saturn-Uranus energy configures itself. Yes, so if you plot the conjunctions of Saturn and Uranus, can't tell where it starts, there it starts. If you plot them around the zodiac, look at the picture they make. I mean, that's so full of energy, isn't it? So all I did was just, I got my solar fire running from the year 001, in chunks of 999 years, because that's the most you can do, and just plotted around the zodiac everywhere where they made a conjunction. And what you see, this is so lovely, what you see is that there is a pattern. They occur about every 47 years, the conjunctions. And how they go is they alternate between oppositions and quincunxes, and they are very, very close most of the time. They're not like fuzzy approximate, they are within 1 or 2 degrees of orb. Then occasionally there's a little blip that you'd expect that with Uranus, you know. But so it goes opposition, there's one opposition, and then there's a quincunx. And then there's another opposition, and then the other quincunx. So actually, it's making a whole on, it's making a dynamic series of yods as it goes through the zodiac. Yod, sometimes called the finger of God, the finger of destiny. The feeling of a quincunx, which is 150 degrees, recall, just fits so brilliantly with the Saturn-Uranus, because 150 degrees, it hasn't yet got to the opposition, well, and now that would be the waxing one, obviously. There's a feeling of leaning towards an awareness that's just out of reach. You just don't get it. And therefore, situations repeat. You get frustrated. You can't see clearly. You feel as if you're being obstructed, and it goes on and on and on like that. Until a transit keys into one of the corners of a yod, and it starts to unlock the stuff. And it's quite a deep aspect, psychologically speaking. It often has not just immediate psychological resonances, but it often does go into ancestral themes and things like that. But the feeling of the pressure to resolve something that you can't even quite define what on earth it is, that's the emotional tone of a quincunx. And that definitely feels a bit Saturn-Uranus. Also this thing of it's resolved something past that keeps on arising and you can't quite see it. Every time you turn, it turns with you. You know, 150 degrees, like that. So yeah, that's what it does in the sequence. One opposition, one quincunx, one opposition, one quincunx. Just, I was so thrilled when I saw that, because it just seemed so descriptive. In 1990, when this Saturn-Uranus was still within orb, there was a song, which is now a very, very famous song, by a German band called the Scorpions. And this song was, at least it became famous in 1990, and it was a celebration of all of the things that had just happened politically. And the song is called The Winds of Change. And I just want to read a few lines of the lyrics, because it's pure Saturn-Uranus. And the album is called Crazy World, Saturn-Uranus. Crazy, Uranus, World, Saturn. So just a few lines here. The world is closing in. Did you ever think that we could be so close, like brothers? The future's in the air, I can feel it everywhere blowing with the wind of change. Take me to the magic of the moment on a glory night, where the children of tomorrow dream away in the wind of change. Walking down the street, distant memories are buried in the past forever. The wind of change blows straight into the face of time, like a storm wind that will ring the freedom bell for peace of mind. Now, I'll tell you what happened. How come I have this? I fell asleep last night with the radio on. A bad idea. Bad idea. But it was Radio 4, so in the middle of the night it switches on to World Service. And I woke up like electrified in the middle of the night with the radio burbling. And there was a bunch of interviews with people who'd been in the Velvet Revolution and this and that and the other. And I just heard the person say something about this German band called the Scorpions. And then they played of the first few lines of this song, and I was in that sort of half awake, half asleep state, and I heard these words about the winds of change blowing in the face of time. I said, oh my God, it's Saturn and Uranus, and that's the time. And so literally I switch on my light, I get my pen, and I found a piece of paper, and I was half asleep, and then I went back to sleep again, switch the radio, go back to sleep. So I get up in the morning, and there's this funny little piece of paper by the bed with a scribbling on it. And then I thought, oh my God, yes, it was like a dream in the middle of the night. I heard this piece of music. So I then went online, and I was hoping to find a clip of the music to play you, but didn't quite get that far. But I actually found the lyrics, because in my sleepy state, I only remember that one punchline. But that really does say what this is about. So I've got some pictures here which, in my way of thinking, address the quality, as it were, of the end of the world is here. This is an old alchemical engraving of one kind or another. So from the Saturn point of view, any radical change feels like the world is ending. And we are living in a time when there are a lot of projections, predictions, fears, convictions, you name it, about our demise, the demise of the earth, the extinction of whatever. I mean, this is part of our collective consciousness at the moment. Now, I wouldn't be so foolish as to say none of this is true, because I don't know. But here's the thing. There have been prophecies about the end of the world. Ten a penny. Down the ages, there have been scores, maybe thousands, maybe millions of prophets that have been discredited because they predicted the end of the world, and then it didn't happen, at least in the way that they said it would. Their world ended because they lost their credibility, etc. So I'm just mentioning this here because remember that from the point of view of poor old Saturn, any change is the end of the world. Because it's like a total failure, because his job is to hold things together. So I find that quite useful to remember, is that sometimes when there is a process of ending, it raises a great deal of fear. Where there's Saturn, there's fear. And so when one is trying to be heroic and deny fear, it finds its way out from under the carpet or wherever we've put it, finds its way out into the world. And then what it looks like is, oh my God, terror. Terrorism means the cultivation of fear, actually. You know, like naturism is the cultivation of being able to feel pleasure and delight in being able to go without clothes. Naturism, you cultivate the capacity to do that. Terrorism is you cultivate fear. That's what happens, you see. So, very important, this process of projection that happens with Saturn. And the psychological shorthand for it is deny, split, project. So, if I'm afraid and I'm trying to be heroic and denying that I'm actually feeling afraid, I split away from my own connection with my own feelings, and then the next step is I project it onto somebody else. And I find them frightening, or I feel that they are doing stuff to me that's no good. Yeah. So this is a very common process that's going on now, that's of course fueled by the fact that there's so much information around on all sorts of levels that's unverifiable. A lot of it is definitely spurious. One has to wonder about the motivation, etc., etc. You know, I'm sure you can figure all that one out for yourself. But just remember, it's part of the times that we're living in. We don't know to what extent this is true. You know, we don't know what's ending or how it's going to go. You know, the truth is that the Earth and the whole geosystem has been through waves of different kinds of extinction, many, many of them, which they can be read in the geological record, for example. So there's a feeling of imminent destruction that's part of the mind field which we live in now. And how we relate to that is, that's part of the challenge of being alive now. Because it's as if, as long as we are trying to hold on to everything and keep control of everything and so on and so forth, we will get very tense and very frightened, very Saturn. But if we can include the temporality and the fragility of material existence in our consciousness, we get a different kind of experience. It can still be scary, but it has a kind of heartfulness and a poignancy that, actually, cliche phrase, but it's not a cliche either, that thing about living every day as if you knew it was going to be your last. And this kind of context, I think it is nudging us into that possibility. So that's why I included that. Oh yes, I love this. This is the frontispiece from Galileo's book called The Dialogue Between Two World Views. And it was on the list of forbidden publications in 1622. And there we have it. You know, this ain't the first time in history that there's been the clash of worldviews, the clash of the old and the new. It happens all the time. And I love that one. Oh, there we have our graph.
Independence of thought, isn't it?
Pardon?
It's independence of thought that is so valuable.
Absolutely. And in a way, that's, you might say, the best of Uranus. Here's a lovely photo a friend sent me. She just saw this. Someone had made this on a beach. And you know, the tide will come in. See where she's put this, or she or he who made this. It's just about at the edge. See, the tide mark is just there. So in other words, you don't know whether the tide is going to come in and smash this work of art to pieces or not. But that's part of the process of making it that way. And we're back to that one. And back to that one. Now, a couple of things about Uranus and Saturn. Now, you all know that Saturn is the furthest away planet of the easily visibles. And he's the one with the rings. And Saturn's rings go around in the same plane as where all the planets are orbiting. That's called the ecliptic. Now, here's the thing. Uranus has been discovered to also have rings. I guess you all knew that, yeah? Anyone here not know that? Oh, okay. Well, get this. Imagine, if you will, that you're standing on the sun. Don't burn up, please. And you're looking out across space, and the pathways of the planets all going around you, they're kind of passing in front of your view. So you're looking out across the ecliptic, and you see Saturn there, so beautiful and elegant, with its rings. And then you see Uranus. Now, the tilt of Uranus, its inclination, is 87 degrees to the upright. So, perpendicular. So, its rings, Saturn's rings are like this. Uranus' rings are like this. In other words, when you look out across, you see a great big eye looking at you. Yeah? And I was so inspired when I discovered that. I thought, oh no, it is like he is looking at you. And the sense of awakening or opening or seeing or clarifying or aha, it's even there in the actual spatial dynamics. And I've got a few pictures of each of Saturn and Uranus. Oh yes, here's a prayer to Saturn. This is from the Vedic tradition. Saturn, Shani, servant of the light, a dark son of the sun, son of Rudra, lord of tears, I turn my face at the same time towards death and immortality. I am named he who moves slowly, devoted to attachment and stability. I am also Shani, the root of peace. And you know what? I keep this in my computer. In fact, I even keep a stash of copies of this in my work bag. And if I come across anybody who's really having a hard time with their Saturn transits, I give them this to read. Because, you know, especially it's easy for us as astrologers to do that very thing of deny, split and project and make Saturn into the bad guy. Which, I mean, let's face it, that's mad. It's not a bad energy. It's just a very intensive self-confrontation. And we squirm. We don't like it. It's horrible. But to me, this poem, this prayer, it brings the whole kind of spiritual valence of what Saturn is about. The authority, the priest, that's Chagall. That's from Galileo's drawings. He thought there were three things there, you see. He saw Saturn's rings, and he thought it was three bodies. Then when Saturn tilted up slightly different, he thought the little bodies had disappeared because he couldn't see the rings anymore. Now, that's Blake's drawing of Nebuchadnezzar. And I love that because to me that is the very image of the poor ego and what it feels like. Fear, yeah? Nebuchadnezzar was the king who fell from grace, as it were. And I forget the exact quote from the Bible, but it's all about that he ended up eating grass like the beasts. So this feeling of fear, humiliation, shame, that it's very contracted, you see how tense he is. This is what our poor old ego feels like when it's in a process of confrontation or loss or grief or deep change. And so really, you know, it behoves us to be very compassionate and kind to these parts of us. You see, it doesn't work to go, oh my God, I'm feeling like this, I better pretend something else. It doesn't work.
Part of the problem is that we're frightened of our feelings, aren't we?
But that's what this is portraying, exactly. That is the portrayal of the feeling of fear. Yeah. Saturn is also connected with the root chakra, where lives a whole reservoir of vitality, of course. Root also means what it says, where we come from, our tribal roots, national roots, familial roots, the roots of place, and all those things. Here is another Saturn image of a ruin, something that was once solid and whole and vital, and is there only in skeleton form. Here's some pictures of Saturn with the rings. In the mythology, Saturn was said to devour his children. Another image of authority. It's like an image of dereliction or depression. It's Stanley Spencer, Christ in the wilderness. From that saying in the Bible, even the foxes have holes. So the feeling of exile, outsider. Look at his face. The sense of an ancient glory is also part of Saturn. Now that is a storm on one of the poles of Saturn. See, there's the eye again. They're both very Saturnian images, the Sibyl and the Prophet. Pavlovsky, the thing of time and seeing again. Tiziano, portrait of an old man. Womb and tomb connected with Saturn. A totem. In tribal societies, in some places, the totem was sometimes a tree or a stone carved with symbols that were meaningful and cohesive for the tribe or the clan. And it's actually a very powerful thing to do if you're in a Saturn transit. Make your totem, in a sense, give expression to the images and the references and so forth that live within you, that connect you with the depth of your own past. Because it's as if Saturn needs us to be rooted so that new growth can occur. So in this middle period of the whole five of the Saturn things, only got a couple of images of Uranus. You know, he wasn't worshipped anywhere at any altar in ancient Greece, because he's the great sky god, you know, limitless emptiness. But here's a picture of the rings. See, there would be the pole of Uranus, and you can see it's almost tilted up to the perpendicular. And then this face, to me, that is ultimate space. To me, that face is expressing what the highest level of the Uranian energy is actually about. You know, I think when we first learn about Uranus, it's easy to associate it with, you know, the rebel, the revolutionary, and so on and so forth. And that's all true, as far as it goes. But the real revolution is the opening of our consciousness. So to me, this face shows that. Then I've just got a few images of, like, threshold. In fact, let me do this as a... And I'll just let those run. So I'd like now to just open up to any questions, comments, anything that you'd like to add in or ask about, or anything at all. No?
I was going to say, Mary, obviously people have got planets in the houses involved.
Yes.
Then, you know, that's going to be of more significance.
That's right.
To the person.
Thank you for mentioning that. You see, if you have planets, any planets, between about 15 degrees of any of the mutable signs and 3 degrees of the cardinal signs, anywhere within that 17, 18 degrees, which is the arc of the zodiac in the mutable signs, where all these oppositions occur, it's only the last one that occurs in the cardinals. All the other ones are in the mutable. And as you can see, some of them are pretty close together. 18, 57 of Pisces, 20, 39, 24, 42, 28, 46, and then 0, Aries, 24. So you see, because these are very powerful energies, even people who don't have any planets in that little band of any of the mutables will feel this, because it is affecting, as it were, the whole world. It's expressing a very big process of change. It's not just an individual storyline. However, if indeed you do have any planets in that band of the mutables, then how these energies play themselves out in your life, of course, it will be mediated through the particular planet that it's touching. And again, even if you don't have any planets in those areas, these two, in their oppositions, are going to activate one pair of houses. I gave you an example, you know, with my managing to get myself so out of balance when I was doing my writing. So I was doing, you know, Saturn in Virgo, 10th house, being so responsible, and it's to do with my work and so on and so forth. And then whoosh, you know, my whole house was nearly washed away, right? 4th house. Thank goodness for the astrology, because, you know, I could almost see the funny side of it. Almost. So, you know, as another for instance, you know, if it's 1st house and 7th house, I'm drawing this from actual examples, that if it's Uranus that's recently gone over the ascendant and it's now in the 1st house, then the 1st house, 7th house is the axis of relationship. The 1st house is the I am place, and the 7th house is what would be the short way of saying that? It's the house of relationship, but it's also how I experience myself in relation to you. What happens to me in contact with you? So it's where there's a very powerful mirror to my own I am-ness that comes about through the meeting of the other. So in psychological terms, the 7th house is where ideally we're given the opportunities to lose our narcissism, meaning our sort of stance that we are the center of the world and everybody else must revolve around us and fit in with our little fantasy, you see. That gets knocked in the 7th house. So I like to say it's the axis of I am, thou art, and how they interact. So you can see what would happen there. If Uranus goes into the 1st house and it's Saturn in the 7th house, then Uranus in the 1st has a lot of energy. It's a time of big innovation, quantum leaps. Sometimes it can be where, you know, life has brought situations that thrust you into a new phase of your life, a new way of thinking. It's a time of unsteady energy, a lot of excitement, etc. And from that Uranian point of view, it's like if I am Uranus, then everybody else looks like Saturn, right? And then you might get really antsy and really angry and want to kind of wake them up or overturn their old ways or whatever. Do you see how it would go? And then equally, if it goes around the other way around, if the I am department has Saturn going through it, you might be getting really in touch with the Saturnian feelings that you have inside. So you might feel, I am timid, I am a bit hesitant, I feel beleaguered and I feel burdened and so on, as well as, yes, I know I'm really strong and yeah, I will thrive and persist and so forth, you see. And from that point of view, other people could feel like dangerously disruptive because you feel a bit tender and you don't want to be upended all the time, for goodness sake. Do you see? So, because it's an opposition, all oppositions, not only those to do with Saturn and Uranus, have this relational potential to them, like 1st house, 7th house. That's the sort of archetype. And so oppositions do often show very clearly in our contacts with other people. And yeah, so the two houses that are being emphasized, they will show very, very clearly in terms of this shedding the old or redoing the old and taking these quantum leaps and doing new things, you know. And then, as I say, if it was keying into any particular planet, then that would obviously be involved.
Comment on the ask you for quite a long question.
Sure.
And you talk about sort of cycle and the five sort of stages.
Yes, yes.
It comes to breakthrough and
yes.
But an interesting little thing on MSN today, where someone was saying that they identifying 10 changes in behaviour, but essentially it's people starting to produce rather than consume. And you can see that as a sort of changes. And I just wonder, what do you think, and they were asking the question, is this likely to stick, or will people just, once they've, you know, once things got to get better, will they just go back to their old selves? And I wonder whether you can see...
That's very interesting.
...or whether this is just a kind of stretching a piece of elastic and it's just going to go back.
That's a very interesting question. You know... It's possible that the way things have become in global terms and economic terms and so on and so forth, that there just ain't no more leeway. You know? So in that sense, that, you know, the whole notion of a wake-up call, I mean, that's very Uranian, isn't it? You know, hello, wake up. So I suppose... See, what I'm also thinking, if I just think about, you know, the world situation and all that, which I try not to, because all that speculation is so fruitless. But if I look at it in terms of this cycle, I think it's very interesting, because it sort of marks out September, October as maybe being quite revealing, because that's when some kind of pivot is reached, that it can either tilt towards something new. Or, if one is still, I don't know, maybe borrowing trillions trying to prop up the old system, that's no good, because that's the old ways. It takes more and more and more and more and more energy to keep up the old ways once they've basically gone their sell-by date, you know? So, what you've said is very interesting, given that it's out there in the collective mind. You know, people talking about the shift away from consumerism. No surprise, of course, that poor old Gordon Brown, have you seen his chart? You probably know it, because probably lots of people...
Has he seen his chart?
Huh?
Has he seen his chart?
Oh! Look at this. I mean, you've got to think, the poor guy. It is quite incredible. I mean, even whether, you know... Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, it's, you know, Well, the next port of call is Uranus turns retrograde on the 1st of July. And that is... It's at 26:37, so it's almost on his Venus. But then, in the middle of September, it is exactly in the same degree as his Venus. The next lot of oppositions are exactly in that Venus. And, you know, what's interesting as well is, you see, look, he's got from 15 of the mutables through till early cardinals, almost all of his chart. Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. About half, more than half his planets are in that zone of the zodiac. And, you know, at this point, it's almost, you know, some of the things that have been going on seem to me so bizarre that it's kind of difficult to tell what is the old way and what is the new way, because it looks like a kind of glorious Uranus in Pisces muddle at the moment. Do you know what I mean? For example, and this, you know, very interesting, all this stuff in the 12th house, you know, without wanting to go into a whole big thing about what's been happening recently, but the whole expenses scandal and all that, you know, it's obviously true that there are some people who have overstepped the bounds, who have been greedy, who have been duplicitous. But it's also true, from the way I hear it, that there it's like a situation where people have been set up. It's like, well, here are the rules, and this is your rights. And then they do that, maybe not being discerning enough or not thinking it true, and then they get busted. Now, to me, that's a setup. By any other name, that's a setup, and I haven't heard anybody call it by that name. It is a setup. So that makes me think, hey, okay, so what purpose is all this hoo-ha serving? Apart from the obvious, which is that, you know, structures are changing. The old order is being challenged. That's so obvious, it's almost boring. But I keep thinking, what is the purpose of all this? Do you see? Like, this is a very good smokescreen for what? Yeah? So that's the kind of Saturn Uranus. It's like the obvious toing and froing. Well, it's you know, riveting and shocking and maybe even, dare we say, a bit hopeful. But actually, it's not the real cookie crumbling. That's something else. That still has to show itself, do you see? So this thing of it being a hall of mirrors, that's very Uranus in Pisces, you know? So in some way that we don't know about quite fully yet, Gordon Brown is central to this process. You know, whether he stays or goes, he's already played his role, you see.
Chiron, at the beginning of Capricorn.
Yes, look, so Pluto is there at the moment. So he's got a T-square in exactly the early cardinals, which is where Saturn will be. He'll have his second Saturn return in November of this year. So, you know, like him or hate him, he's a man of the moment. And what's going on around him is an amazing expression, like an astrodrama. You couldn't make it up if you tried, you know, of what's going on. And just let me show you something else here. Now, look here. Barack Obama, it's a partile quincunx of Saturn and Uranus. Oh, I should have just pointed out with Gordon Brown, he was of the group that have Saturn square Uranus, and in fact in a T-square with Chiron in this case. But he's got a hard aspect of Saturn and Uranus. David Cameron was born during the last set of oppositions. Barack Obama has a partile quintile. Look how close it is. It's 3 arc minutes off, absolutely exact. And who's this other one? Oh, that's us today. Okay. So, you know, some of the major players, many of them, have got hard aspects of Saturn and Uranus actually on their chart. Well, I'm looking at the clock on my computer, the clock, on my computer, Uranus, and realizing that, I mean, incredibly, the evening seems to have come to an end. I can't believe it. I just got here, you know. And again, I just want to thank you for just being so delightful. I always have such a good time when I come down to talk to your group. And I hope I'll see you again in the future.
Yes.
And as they say, watch that space. You know?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.